Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson Extra. I'm Jason Inman. If you listen to the regular episode on The Ray, you know that we have a very special guest here with me today, writer Steve Orlando. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Happy to be here, man.
All right, so on this podcast, we like to dig deep, kind of go into some of the comic book origins of the people that we bring onto the show. Steve, I want to ask, how did you get into comic books, and do you remember your very first comic book?
Yeah, I do. My first book was actually West Coast Avengers number 16, which
nice.
which was a tale of two kitties. It had Hellcat and Tigra fighting over the. I guess Tigra had previously worn the Hellcat costume, so the Hellcat mantle, and she was fighting over it with Patsy Walker, and it was all pretty intense. We also had like white. Costume Era Vision and like red jumpsuit Hank Pym in that book. So a lot of stuff going on there. And you know, that was like a flea market in Syracuse in 1987. And, we continued on from there, you know, a lot of bargain bin books, which is why I love these sort of obscure characters and random people are important to me that to the mainstream are not that important.
Mm.
And then like, as I continue to be into comics, it was like, it's funny, like the thing, the on-ramps for me were the off-ramps for many people because of where I bought books. You know, like I had a Walden Books in my town with a spinner rack there. So I intensely followed the Clone Saga, which again is like when half of the industry was like, we're done with this. And I was like, oh, the clones, this is amazing. And again, at the time, you know, much like, you know, when you're young, you never really know what is good. So I thought the Jackal with his like quoting of Desi Arnaz and things was like really, really cool. it has not aged well, but, I stayed on for that. Still love the Scarlet Spider with his ripped hoodie. It's a great costume to some people.
I love that costume.
and then I stuck around for a little while and did a lot of trading card collecting. And then I saw an article in the Syracuse New Times about how Superman was getting brand new powers and a brand new costume, and he was never going back to the old way. So now is the time to get on board. And that is when I started picking up Action, all the Superman, which was effectively a weekly book in the mid to late 90s, because all the stories connected. So I picked up all that stuff. And after that, I was pretty solidly in. That was like 96 or 97. I jumped onto Grant Morrison, Howard Porter's Justice League. We were allowed to read that in middle school as part of our silent, sustained reading period because it had words. And I've been on board, you know, doing deep dives into stuff ever since.
Now, where in your comic book reading history did you decide this is what I want to do? This is why I want to write comic books?
Well, it was when I realized I could not draw in a way that people would pay money for. I always knew that I wanted to be part of comics ever since actually the editorial pages in those Superman books, because just the creative process and talking about how they put together the new costume and the design and the back and forth and the story behind it, I found very infectious. But at the same time, the speed of my ideas was the first thing that I said, well, maybe I'd like to be a writer. And then in college, I wrote and illustrated my own graphic novel, 100 pages. I did everything. I lettered it. And that was when I really knew that I wanted to be on the writing side of things, because I could do the art and I did it, you know. But at the same time, I was doing a page a day. It was 100 pages. And about 30 pages in, mentally, in my headspace, I was like, oh, I want to move on to the next idea. I want to keep going. And the true joy for me was was in the brand new and the freshness of the ideas versus the implementation of them. Mm-hmm. And so you take joy from different things on different parts of the creative process. And doing that really showed me that writing is the side in which I wanted to really exist.
Now, can this graphic novel be found online?
Hopefully I've destroyed them all at this point.
I just had to ask. Now, when was the first time beyond you in college, did you self-publish your own independent comic book? Did you pitch to any companies? Where was your first comic that got you in the door?
In the door was actually a book called Outlaw Territory that Image published in 2008. And, you know, comics are a lot of networking, much like most things in entertainment. And I had done a lot of work that was not publishable, suffice to say, for a long time. But, you know, doing these pitches, because I started trying to get into comics when I was like 13 and I didn't get in until I was like 30. You know, you create relationships with artists. So this anthology came around, and this guy, Tyler Nickum, who I had done some small sort of self-published work with before on like that I printed on like Kablam or some sort of on-demand printing mm-hmm. service, got the offer to work in this anthology. And he said, well, you know, I'll do it, but I'd like to work with Steve, you know. And I was like, oh man, 8 pages at Image, I'm in. You know, I've done it. And it actually ended up being 16 pages because we were so on time, they gave us another story to fill out the length mm-hmm. of the book. But of course, I was not in, and that was published. And it took 4 years for me to get another 8-page story in Vertigo, and 2 years after that to get another one. And a year after that, in 2015, is when Midnighter launched. So, and I had an Image book in between there as well, called Undertow. But all that happens, you know. When people ask me about sort of the inroads into comics, you know, I always sort of tell them that talent alone is not enough, because talent, you know, you have to be visible in the moment for people when there's an opportunity. So networking got me the opportunities. And then talent or lack thereof for 10 years, you know, showed me I had to go back down the totem pole and keep working. And then eventually I reached the top when I was producing publishable work, and we finally sort of slipped our foot in the door. But it can be a hustle. You know, some people get in overnight, but I like to tell people how long it took me, which is at the time more than half my life. Mm-hmm. Is you just got to not stop, you know, and I didn't. And here we are talking about how I got into comics. So it does happen.
Now, what is your daily schedule like? How do you write most of your books? Because you're writing a couple of books at the same time. So I want to know, like, I like to ask people, basically, what is your work schedule like?
Well, I mean, ideally, I have a little more time than I have right now. We're in sort of a crunch. So, I mean, I write a book a week now. And sometimes another one floating across the weekends in a given month. But the schedule is kind of the same either way. You know, a lot of the planning of the book goes into the outlining, which I can do sort of at my leisure. But then when it comes to implementation, you know, I pride myself. I've never missed a deadline in my entire history of working for DC. And I've been doing 1 to 2 books a week every week since I signed my exclusive. So, and that happens because it is very much, you know, I treat it like a job. I do work from home, but I have an office in my house, and I wake up and I usually work from like probably about 10 to 6 every day.
And now, is the 10 to 6, is that a lot of that? Is that just, you know, sitting at that keyboard plunking out scripts?
Yeah, that's most, if not all of it. I mean, okay. You know, basically, like when you're on the schedule like I'm on now, I mean, everybody's different. But for me, I try to block on a 20-page script. I try to block 10 pages a day, 10 pages a day, and then dialogue 10 pages a day, dialogue 10 pages the next day. And then it's Friday, I revise, and then I send it in. And then I do it again the next week. You know, when I was on Midnighter, I had a little more time, and we could sort of be a little more romantic about things. And I perhaps long to get back there. But right now, you know, we are very production minded, which I think is good. I mean, people, you can lapse into this idea that this is, you know, the arts are not a job, but it's a midpoint. It is a midpoint. It is a job. So I think that having a very strong structure for me helps me be more productive and more professional. You know, obviously everybody's mileage may vary on that, but for me, having a quote unquote daily grind, makes everything go a lot more smoothly.
Now for you, where do you find is the best place, or how do you drum up new ideas when you're looking for the next villain, the next storyline that's going to happen in one of your books? Where do you find is the best place, or how do you come up with inspiration?
I mean, the everything that's happening outside of the world of comics to me is where your inspiration comes from, you know. You follow the news, you follow science news, you read, you know, whatever interests you. I mean, everybody's interests are different. You know, I'm very much into sort of pop culture and folklore, but I'm also into sort of like social social movements and idiosyncratic social movements. I think you have to be informed with what's going on in the world, because otherwise your work doesn't seem relevant, you know. And then the way that you keep things relevant is knowing sort of what is being talked about or what's not being talked about and should be. So, you know, I do a lot of reading. I try to stay very up on various sources of news, you know, in new medicines, new technologies and things like that. And just the world in general, you know, like the Queen of Fables, who's coming in Justice League, for example, is sort of a reaction to the, I would cautiously say, sort of the negative overtones of the world in general right now. People, regardless of their affiliation, are not feeling very positive about the world. And in the case of the Queen of Fables, here she comes with the offer of an easy way out, you know, like a devil's bargain that you probably know you shouldn't take, but at the same time, things are so bad and you don't see a way out otherwise. So you take it. You're more desperate, you're more despondent, and you're more depressed than ever. We feel more hopeless than ever, so we do things that we normally wouldn't, or we make concessions that we normally wouldn't. So, you know, the idea of the Queen of Fables and using her came to me because, you know, who in many cases right now wouldn't just want a simple way out? You know, who wouldn't want to be able to flip a switch and have things be better? And now we all know better and know that that's not possible. But now imagine the DC universe, where everything that's happening in our world is happening, but on top of that, these murder crazy Batman are raining down from the sky, you know, and all of these other things have just blown up across the world. And the idea that maybe people are in a place and they've been whittled down to a place where they could take this deal and let her in, seemed evocative to me. And that's a response to where we are now, you know, as a world, not just as a country, and filtered through the lens of the DC universe, of course.
Now, Steve, I have to ask you as your final question, is there a character out there that it would be your dream job to write, or have you already written that character?
Well, I mean, Midnighter was a bucket list character, and I broke into DC on Midnighter. So in some ways I've already done it, but the real answer is, you know, Martian Manhunter is my favorite character. I long to write him. And I already have, technically, you know, my friend Frank Barbieri and I wrote him on the Martian Manhunter, Marvin the Martian one shot, for our Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes crossover month. Which, you know, was super fun, and that only sort of ignited my passion more to try to craft this evergreen, no pun intended, story with him someday. You know, I long to do what Tom and Mitch are doing with Mr. Miracle with Jean, because he's my favorite DC Comics character. So if I have my way someday, that'll happen. I've got a plan, you know, to break him down more than we've ever seen him, but also raise him up to a spot that, where he's achieved more than he ever has before. So hopefully someday.
Nice. Well, I look forward to that run. And Steve, thank you again for talking to us a little bit extra. Please again, tell our listeners about some of the books that they can buy coming from you in the future.
Well, so in the future, as I might have said, you've got Justice League of America, which is getting bigger and bigger, and leading to some things you never expected in the spring of 2018, characters you never expected in the DC universe in the spring of 2018. We've got Supergirl, which is reaching a pretty big climax in our current arc, in plain sight. Brand new villains, returns of people like Strange Visitor and Director Bones, who I love. And then we have the Justice League Doom Patrol event, Milk Wars, which crosses over the Young Animal universe with the DC universe. And it's just going to have moments that you never thought you'd see before, you know, moments or that you didn't know you wanted, you know, meetings between Batman and Flex Mentallo, the ultimate logic, you know, man of logic versus the ultimate man of absurdity, like things that I have been waiting my whole life to write. And sneaking in as well, by the way, is I think one of my favorite stories I've done in the Young Monsters in Love Valentine's Day one shot, which I just turned in.
Sounds intriguing.
Yeah, it's going to be it's pretty wonderful. It's pretty wonderful. So I check that out for the love story you didn't know that you were going to get in that book from me, and an amazing, amazing artist, and Nick Klein, who I've never worked with before. But I'm super excited too, from Drifter and a bunch of other great things. It's going to be really special.
Nice. Well, thank you so much for talking to us, Steve, and good luck with all your products in the future.
Oh, thank you, man.